Okay, let's unpack this. We are diving deep into what's being called the 2025 geopolitical crypto black swan.
Yeah, it's quite the event to analyze.
Absolutely. Picture this. Maybe up to $19 billion, that's billion with a B, wiped out from digital asset derivatives markets in just 24 hours.
It's staggering. It's the largest deleveraging event we've ever seen in digital asset history. Historic, truly.
And our mission today really is to give you the shortcut, to help you understand that this massive crash, this number, it wasn't just random market noise.
No, not at all. This was fundamentally a catastrophic failure caused by a kind of perfect storm, wasn't it?
Exactly. A singular geopolitical shock hitting a market that was just, well, extremely overleveraged.
And we need to look past the sort of surface level panic, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The goal here is to really analyze the specific market vulnerabilities that allowed this to happen. We need to track the mechanics of that liquidation cascade.
Which, as you pointed out before, shifted the center of risk, didn't it?
It absolutely did. It fundamentally moved it from centralized exchanges, where we traditionally looked, right into DeFi.
Wow. Okay.
And maybe the most surprising part, uncovering the specific role that some very sophisticated, very calculated traders played. They didn't just react. They seemed to shape the event.
Right. Turning a dip into an absolute rout, as you said. Okay, let's start at the beginning then. Section one, the market priming the illusion of health.
Right. The setup.
So let's talk about that paradox first, because leading up to Friday, October 10th, the crypto market felt, well, euphoric. Bitcoin broke $125,000.
All-time highs. Incredible sentiment.
But how could an ongoing U.S. government shutdown, which had started around October 1st, how could that actually fuel these prices? Doesn't political chaos usually scare money away?
Into something completely counterintuitive, yeah. But it was all driven by this narrative, the debasement trade thesis.
Okay, explain that a bit.
Well, it's a pretty simple idea, actually. If the government looks dysfunctional, if it seems like they're just going to print more money eventually,
right,
then the thinking is the U.S. dollar loses value. So investors rush into hard assets, things they see as inflation hedges.
So people weren't worried about the shutdown itself?
Not really. They saw it more as a catalyst for future fiscal stimulus and for the Fed keeping monetary policy loose, accommodative.
And that narrative took hold.
Oh, incredibly powerful. Bitcoin surged past 125K, like you said. Gold futures climbed to above $3,950 an ounce.
And institutions were buying.
Yeah, strong institutional spot buying,
mm-hmm,
especially through those U.S.-listed spot Bitcoin ETFs. That really reinforced the bullish feeling.
So the market felt healthy.
It felt healthy, but as you pointed out, that feeling was utterly deceptive. An illusion.
Because that euphoria, it sounds like the perfect setup for a major fall.
Right.
Well, the spot market looks strong. The real danger, the tinder, was somewhere else entirely.
Exactly. Hidden in plain sight, really, in the derivatives pool.
Right.
And we actually had warnings. Just 2 days before the crash, October 8th, there was analysis pointing out the market was stretched.
What did it say?
Well, it noted things like rising leverage and crowded call positioning. Basically, too many people betting on prices going up, suggesting growing short-term fragility.
Okay, fragility. What specific metrics showed that?
There were a few screaming warnings, actually. One was that something like 97% of all circulating Bitcoin was an unrealized profit.
97%, wow.
Yeah. Historically, when that number gets so high, it massively increases the chance of people just taking profits, selling.
Makes sense.
But the extreme danger, the real powder keg, was the, quote, extreme buildup of leverage. Soaring perpetual futures open interest.
Open interest, that's the total value of all the bets, right?
Essentially, yes. The total value of outstanding derivatives contracts, it showed just how deeply committed traders were to rising prices, how leveraged they were.
Creating a precarious situation.
Highly precarious. Like a tightly coiled spring just waiting for something to snap it back.
Yeah.
Ready for a violent long squeeze or all those long bets get wiped out.
Yeah. Section two, the geopolitical spark, the tariff shockwave. So, we have this market primed for maximum pain, just needing a trigger.
Yep, just waiting.
And then it arrived. That geopolitical spark. A really serious, really rapid escalation in the U.S.-China trade war.
It started subtly, actually. China expanded some export controls on rare earth minerals on October 9th, tit for tat.
But the U.S. response wasn't subtle at all.
No, it was immediate. And remarkably aggressive. Friday, October 10th, President Trump announces these sweeping measures set to hit November 1st.
And the headline was huge.
Oh, yeah. The shocker. A new 100% tariff on all goods imported from China. And crucially, in addition to the tariffs already in place.
Wow. that level of economic warfare, that alone changes everything globally.
Absolutely. But for crypto specifically, what really injected pure fear almost instantly was something else tucked into that announcement.
The regulatory ambiguity you mentioned.
Exactly. It was this vague inclusion of new export controls on any and all critical software originating from the U.S.
Critical software? That could mean almost anything in crypto, right?
That's the point. Think about the whole ecosystem. It's built on software, protocols, exchanges, wallets. Much of it touches U.S. jurisdiction somehow.
So this vague policy.
It introduced this massive, just unquantifiable risk to the entire global system. You couldn't price it. So the reaction was instantaneous. Sell everything first, ask questions later.
Okay, let's talk about that flashpoint, because this seems like the critical moment where that geopolitical shock just instantly shattered that narrative, that long-held belief about Bitcoin being a safe haven.
It evaporated.
Yeah.
Completely. What we saw instead was a classic, almost textbook risk-off cascade.
Meaning
investors flee anything perceived as risky.
Yeah.
Global stocks tumbled hard. The S&P 500 fell over 2.7%.
Yeah.
The NASDAQ, the tech-heavy index, plummeted 3.5%.
And crypto went with tech, not against the chaos.
Exactly. Instead of capital flowing into crypto as some kind of hedge against global instability, capital fled out of crypto and tech stocks. And where did it go?
Let me guess. Traditional safe haven.
Precisely. U.S. Treasuries and gold. They rallied.
So this confirmed it again. When real crisis hits...
When faced with a true systemic shock, cryptocurrency behaves like a high beta risk asset. It swings much more violently than traditional stocks. And it's highly correlated with tech, with the NASDAQ. Not a safe haven, not in that moment.
Section 3, anatomy of the record-breaking liquidation. Okay, so the tariffs were the spark.
Yep.
But that massive leverage we talked about, that was the fuel for the fire.
Absolutely. The initial price drop triggered this violent, self-reinforcing cascade of liquidations.
Okay, let's break down that mechanism for everyone listening. When the price dropped, how quickly did those automated liquidations actually kick in? And what was the effect of turning billions in long positions into instant sell orders?
Oh, it happens in milliseconds. It's automated by the exchanges. When a leveraged position, someone's bet, falls below its required margin level.
The maintenance margin.
Right. The exchange automatically foresells the collateral. The assets backing the bet. They do it to stop the trader losing more than they put in and to protect the exchange itself.
But that forced selling.
It immediately dumps huge amounts of supply onto an already panicked market, which drives the price down further, which then triggers the next round of liquidations from people whose margin levels just got hit.
It feeds on itself.
Exactly. A self-feeding loop. Experts were pretty much unanimous on this. The rout was sparked by those U.S.-China tariff fears, definitely. But it was fueled by institutional overleverage.
The numbers describing the carnage, they really drive this home.
They really do. We saw over $7 billion in leveraged positions liquidated in a single hour on Friday.
$7 billion. Yeah. In 1 hour.
Yeah. And across the full 24-hour window, the total estimates range from about $9.5 billion up to $19.3 billion.
Affecting how many people?
More than 1.6 million trading accounts globally.
Wow.
And crucially, the market was just overwhelmingly positioned one way for prices to go up.
All right.
So up to $16.7 billion of that massive total liquidation number belonged to long positions being wiped out.
It's just a brutal reminder about leverage, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It's a double-edged sword. You make 10 times the profit,
yeah,
maybe, until the moment the market turns, and then you lose 10 times your capital. Instantly.
Okay, but despite that staggering volume, the crash itself, it actually acted as a kind of brutal character test for different assets. And Bitcoin, maybe surprisingly, held up the best during that peak panic hour.
It did, relatively speaking. It only fell about 4% in that worst hour. Bitcoin and Ethereum actually showed the most stability. Ethereum dropped about 11.2% initially, but then it rebounded quite strongly.
And the others, the altcoins.
They were the weakest links, consistently. XRP got hit the hardest, crashing almost 37%. Dogecoin fell over 31%.
What does that tell you?
It signals that in moments of really extreme fear, the market views these assets as, well, purely speculative. Short-term vehicles, not long-term stores of value like Bitcoin or maybe Ethereum, are increasingly seen.
And the chaos was so intense it actually broke some of the plumbing, the centralized infrastructure.
Yeah, absolutely. Binance, the largest centralized exchange, faced widespread technical problems. Reports of frozen accounts, stop-loss orders just failing to execute.
Which must have been terrifying for users.
Oh, completely. Binance actually ended up compensating users around $283 million for losses they attributed to those system failures.
Wow.
And we also saw Athena's USD, you know, the synthetic dollar thing that generates yield. It's closely tied to activity on these exchanges. It briefly depegged, falling to like Gerlauer's 66 cents amidst all the turmoil.
But here's the really profound part you hinted at earlier. The data showed something incredible about where the worst of the liquidations actually happened. It wasn't Binance leading the charge.
No. And this is critical. The undisputed leader in processing liquidations by volume was Hyperliquid.
Hyperliquid, that's a decentralized perpetuals exchange, right? Not like Binance.
Exactly. DeFi. Hyperliquid processed $10.3 billion in liquidations. That's over half, 53.3% of the total market share during that period.
$10.3 billion. How does that compare to Binance?
It's roughly four times the volume Binance handled, which was around $2.4 billion. Four times.
So the most dangerous leverage had migrated.
That's the key insight, I think, for you to really take away. It proves that the most extreme, the most speculative leverage, the kind that truly amplifies systemic risk, it's moved. It's migrated from the regulated centralized exchanges into the more, let's say, capital-efficient, permissionless world of DeFi.
Making that decentralized frontier a new source of risk.
A new and potentially very potent source of global market risk, yes.
Section 4. The architects of the crash, a predatory hunt. Okay, now let's pivot. Let's talk about the human element here, because the story seems to shift now, right? From just mass market panic to something more calculated, strategic action.
It really does. When you look at the on-chain analysis, the data on the blockchain, it strongly suggests the crash was shaped, maybe even accelerated, by sophisticated players. Whales.
And they weren't just reacting to the news like everyone else.
It appears not. It seems they were positioned perfectly to profit from the collapse, maybe even helped it along.
Okay, give us an example. What did the analysis show?
Well, the most compelling case involves an entity, an address, linked to what people call a Satoshi era, Bitcoin OG, someone who's held Bitcoin since way back in 2011.
Okay, an old timer. What did they do?
This address transferred a large amount of USDC stablecoins into Hyperliquid on October 8th.
October 8th. That's 2 days before the tariff announcement.
Exactly. Before the news hit, they used that collateral to build an enormous short position, leveraged about $1.1 billion total.
Shorting Bitcoin and Ethereum.
Yeah, 10x leverage on Bitcoin, 12x leverage on Ethereum, betting heavily that prices would fall.
And when the tariff news...
And the automated liquidation cascade started. They apparently closed out their positions near the absolute bottom of that price wick, the lowest point of the crash.
Making a huge profit.
The estimates are somewhere between $190 million and $200 million profit in a single day.
Wow. And their huge short position itself would have added selling pressure, right?
Absolutely. Mm. It not only profited from the collapse, but it actively accelerated the deleveraging event, provided the sell side liquidity that helped drive prices down, which also, conveniently, allowed them to take profit at the bottom.
Okay, that's one case. But wasn't there another trade with really questionable timing?
Yes, the so-called $88 million trade.
Tell us about that one.
Another trader opened a large Bitcoin short position just 30 minutes before President Trump's tariff announcement actually happened.
30 minutes before? How is that even possible?
Well, that's the question everyone's asking. Adding to the suspicion, the account used was reportedly brand new, created that very same day.
That timing seems impossibly prescient.
It screams either unbelievable luck or perhaps access to non-public information, insider knowledge, or just extreme predatory positioning, sensing the tension.
And they profited.
They profited about $88 million from that trade. And that timing was so suspicious, it actually prompted public calls for an investigation from some pretty influential figures, like attorney John Deaton.
And finally, just to complete the picture, we also saw big institutions selling too.
We did, adding supply to the already panicked market. Notably, BlackRock apparently sold around $972 million worth of Bitcoin on October 10th.
So the picture's pretty clear then. A combination of mass panic.
Yes.
Exploited, or at least capitalized on, by very calculated, very deep-pocketed positioning.
That seems to be the story the data tells.
Okay, outro time. So wrapping this all up, what does this all mean? What are the core takeaways for you listening?
I think the takeaways are pretty undeniable at this point.
Mm-hmm.
First, geopolitics. It's now clearly the primary catalyst for major volatility swings in crypto. Forget protocol upgrades for a minute. This is bigger.
Right. External shocks matter most.
Second, leverage. Especially that extreme concentration of risk we saw on decentralized platforms like Hyperliquid. That's the accelerant. That's what turns a spark into an inferno.
And the crash itself.
Ultimately, yeah, it was a powerful, maybe even necessary flush of speculative excess. But crucially, it wasn't just random panic. It was actively shaped, maybe even engineered, by these sophisticated whale traders.
Okay, so where does that leave the market now, as of, say, October 12th?
Well, fragile, very fragile. Bitcoin is testing the $111,000 level, and experts are sharply divided on what comes next, really split.
Two camps?
Pretty much. One camp says this was a healthy reset, painful, yes, but necessary, cleared out the froth, maybe created a good buying opportunity ahead of, say, future altcoin ETFs people are anticipating.
And the other camp?
The other camp fears this was the signal, the definitive sign that the big three-year bull cycle is over, that we're heading into a deeper correction.
Is there a key level people are watching?
The consensus critical line in the sand seems to be that $100,000 to $102,000 price zone for Bitcoin. If Bitcoin starts closing daily candles below that level,
it would be bad.
That would be profoundly bearish, yes. Most analysts agree on that. And in the meantime, macroeconomically, the health of the U.S.-China trade relationship has suddenly become the single most important external factor for any kind of relief rally.
Okay. So let's leave our listeners with a final thought, a provocative question maybe.
Go for it.
Given everything we've discussed, given that the largest single-day deleveraging event in crypto history was triggered by unpredictable geopolitical action and accelerated by sophisticated whales operating largely on decentralized platforms, does this mean future crypto market cycles are now fundamentally different?
How so?
Are they less about internal factors like protocol developments or halving cycles and permanently more tethered to global macro politics and the calculated, often anonymous positioning of these hyper-leveraged traders?
That's a really interesting question. Are the internal narratives being permanently overshadowed by external forces and hidden hands?
Something for you to mull over or maybe explore on your own?